So I hope you all got a copy of the outline, which is around the room. We're just going to be following that. And tonight is the fourth in our series of Hilchos 101. Tonight's the Lashon Hara do's and don'ts. So we're going to start off with an introduction. And the introduction consists of giving you reading material. So if you really want to improve your knowledge and hopefully the practice of Lashon Hara rules, so I can't recommend this book enough. This is a book called the Chafetz Chaim HaShalem. In this particular edition, in addition to Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan's words, there are commentaries here, and of course this is a book which should be not just read through, but studied. And he goes through the many different categories of what we generally call Lashon Hara. We'll touch upon some of them tonight. And Lashon Hara, of course, literally means evil speech, but there are different forms of it, and each one of them, you know, could be a topic unto itself. The next book, which I actually don't have here, is "Guard Your Tongue" by Zelig Pliskin, which I'm sure people have seen. It's an English version, somewhat, of the Chafetz Chaim's work. This is a book which I picked up years ago called Taharat HaLashon. It's in Hebrew. Similar idea, as you can imagine. I can't recommend this book enough, Words That Hurt, Words That Heal by Joseph Telushkin. It is a great read, if nothing else. But he also goes through a lot of rules, bringing a lot of public anecdotes. And it's interesting that he uses public anecdotes, most notably. And a reason why he can use public anecdotes is because they fall into the realm of what's called public. And if it's public, you can talk about it, and certainly insofar as to learn lessons from them, the examples that he gives, are fantastic, and the lessons which he derives are also great. And one of the points that he makes, I remember early on in the book, is he says one of the beauties of Judaism is that we have, and he's of course referring to the Chafetz Chaim, a 200 to 300 page book which deals primarily with the laws of speech and how we talk about others, or how we specifically don't talk about others. Excellent book. The book which I used primarily tonight to prepare for tonight's class is a relatively new book. I think I mentioned this at the Shabbos Shuvah Drasha. Rabbi Daniel Z. Feldman, who is a Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva University, and it's called False Facts and True Rumors, Lashon Hara in Contemporary Culture. It's printed by Magid Books, which is an offshoot of Koren Publishers, so you can find it there online. I don't remember if I got it on sale. It's listed here as $30. But if you're interested in this subject, it's worth every penny. It's a fantastic book, and it's mostly because Rabbi Feldman, first of all, has a wealth of knowledge. He's a very humble man, but he has a brilliant kind of presentation, and in this book, has a cross selection of not just rabbinic authorities who have talked about Lashon Hara and the like, but he uses a lot of contemporary sources, psychology, and has a chapter, for example, entitled Contemporary Culture. Let me see. What was the subtitle of Contemporary Culture? One second. Journalism, the Internet, and Politics. Okay, so that is actually one of the item number six, more or less, but he goes into great detail, and again, I highly recommend this book. Okay, so Lashon Hara, delving into our topic for the night, the whys and why nots. And by that I mean, why do people do it, and a why not, rather, for why people should not do it. So why do people do it? Well, it's human instinct. I guess we like to gossip. That the example of Lashon Hara that we have in the Torah is Miriam. We have a daily reminder. Zachori Sashir Asa Hashem Lekechla Miriam. Remember what Hashem did to Miriam. What did Miriam do? She spoke about her brother to her brother. Okay? She spoke about the Isha Kushis. Well, that's not clear. That's a bigger discussion. What exactly she was talking about. Is the Isha Kushis that she was referring to, was it Moshe's wife? Was it a different lady? That's a very interesting topic, but that's not the topic for now. She spoke about her brother to her brother. That's clear. Okay, what she spoke about is not so clear. But Think about it. And what happens as a result? She gets tzaras. And from that story, everybody knows. Where does tzaras come from? Lashon hara. I mean, the Gemara in Erechin talks about other things which could also get tzaras. But the number one thing that everybody knows about is tzaras. Why? Because of Miriam. People like to gossip, even about their own family, to their own family. And the Torah's story shows us that even though it's close to home, right? How many, now, and we're going to see when there are examples of when that's okay. Right? Sometimes children need to talk about what they're going to be doing for their parents. Do you know what mom did, you know, recently? You know what dad did? And unfortunately, they're at a stage where they can't take care of themselves anymore. Is that lashon hara? Or does that fall into a category of what we call litoeles? It's for a purpose. So, of course, that does, and that would be an exception. But the idea of just gossiping, even about family, that is what people like to do. And that is a why people do it. Another reason for why people say lashon hara, they want to make themselves look good. And of course, that's connected to the which is some people get a strange pleasure out of making others look bad. So if you talk about what others have done and compare yourself, hey, you know, that person does this, but me, that is a way of making myself look good at somebody else's expense. And even though it might be true, and even though there's a lot of lashon hara is not in the category of rechilus. Rechilus is slander, or motzi shemra, where you're making up stories. Lashon hara very often is true, but what happens as a result of it is it makes others look bad, as we're going to see in some of the examples, which I'm going to give you in a few minutes, of how even something which may be viewed as being very nice, depending on who the recipient of the information is and the context of how it's being spoken, could end up deteriorating a conversation into severe negativity, and therefore it needs to be careful. D is D'oraisa versus Minhag. So why do people speak Lashon Hara? So I heard this great line in the name of Gershom Scholem, the famous Kabbalist, I don't know how to confirm if he actually said it, but I heard it in his name. And he said that if Lashon Hara were a diuk of some kind of, you know, was an insight of, let's say, the Magen Avraham on the Shulchan Aruch, then everybody would be very careful about it. But because it's written in the Torah, so people are not so careful about it. You know how many mitzvahs in the Torah refer to bad speech? Between 30 and 40. I don't remember the exact number. Maybe it's even more than 40. The Chafetz Chaim lists between 30 and 40 mitzvahs that have to do with speech. They're not all lashon hara, but their speech is, or speech or offshoots of speech. And he lists them at the very beginning of the book. I know I gave a class about it early on in 5780, in which I went through those. I'm not going to rehash those here. But Gershon Scholem's line is important because it also reminds us that sometimes our priorities are a little skewed. Okay, somebody asked me recently in the shul, okay, I was recently diagnosed with celiac, the person says to me, and actually all grains. So what do I do about matzah? So I said, okay, it's a good question. Is there a way to find a matzah that's made out of something like kitnios? Is there a rice matzah? Okay, because you have to eat matzah the night of the Seder. So the person said, I can't eat kitnios. I said, you can't eat grain. What are you going to do? Kitnios is not even chametz. You know, you're more strict about the rice matzah than you are about the wheat matzah. The wheat matzah is made out of wheat. So we go nuts about certain minhagim, and we forget and lose sight of the fact that things which are on a d'oraisa level, Torah obligation, these are mitzvos, not to speak lashon hara, not to be tale-bearing, not to be gossipers. It's all in there. But people are more, we want to be more careful about, you know, a comment made by a Rishon or an Achron somewhere in some Yehopetzville book. Okay, we have to remember priorities. And the why not? So Tulushkin actually opens up his book with this story. It's a little Hasidic Maisala where there's a fella who's a big gossiper, who's told by the rabbi or by somebody else, here's a bunch of feathers. Go put one on every doorstep in town. So he goes ahead and he does it, and then he's told, I did the job. He says, okay, now go collect all of them. He says, I can't collect all of them. The wind blew them away. He says, well, that's what Lashon Hara is. When you put something out there, it's there, and there is no way you can collect what you have told because it just, the wind just spreads it. And so you have to be very careful. So that's a why not. And if that image were only in people's minds, when people say sometimes the things which they say, then perhaps we would cut down on this ill and on this evil. And as we know, What destroyed the Beis HaMikdash? Everything that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash had nothing to do with people's relationship with God. I mean, maybe it's an offshoot, but it had to do with people's relationship with their fellow man. And the first breakdown in the social order is when people don't respect each other to the point that they're just willing to talk about them to make them look bad or to make themselves, the speaker, look good. So it's a big avla, it's a big flaw in our people, and it's something which many have written about. And I think that by and large, when we talk about it in a community, most people realize and are certainly aware of the fact that Lashon Hara is a bad thing. Everybody wants to be better about it, but it's human nature, and that's what we're up against. Okay, so we move on to section 3. Lashon Hara allowances. So I mentioned before that there was this concept of litoelis, that if the conversation that is taking place about another person is meant to focus on a particular purpose, and the particular purpose we're going to see a number of examples of, then there is an allowance for it, but there need to be certain guidelines for what that be, for what that may be. So Rabbi Feldman, in his book, introduced me to litoelis number small I, and small I is therapy, right? Sometimes there are people who need to get things off their chest. They need to say things. They need to rant about something. They need to unload the things which are going on in their life about the way somebody is treating them or the way somebody bothers them, whatever it may be. So if that is in fact something which is healing to the individual, so there's room for allowance in that kind of case. Again, under certain conditions, it doesn't mean like, hey, everybody, I want to air my dirty laundry and I need a crowd of 20 people in order to do that. That is not the same thing. But to have a therapist, to have a confidant, for example, that would be a listener, and to help the person through it, that there's certainly purpose for that. Litoelis also means to accomplish it indirectly. There's a Gemara in, I think it's in Sanhedrin, which describes the story of Achan. Achan was the individual who, at the time after when Yeshua led the Jewish people into the land of Israel, so they conquered the city of Yericho, and there was a cherem. Cherem was placed against the city. What that means is that the people were not allowed to take anything from the city. Got to leave it all alone. It's all for God. Okay. There's a fellow by the name of Achan who took something from the cherem, and it was so terrible that when they engaged in their next battle, which was a battle of the city of Ai, the Jewish people lost, and they were pushed back, and a number of people died. And it was very devastating because they said, I thought God is on our side. How could it be that we are going to lose a battle? So Yahushua turns to God, and he says, we're going to make a lottery, and we're going to figure out what happened because somebody took something from the cherem. And through this lottery, they broke it down to the tribe and the family of the tribe, and the specific family of the tribe, and then they figured out that it was Achan. And so the Gemara says, you know why God did it that way? Because even God doesn't want to say it was him. Okay, so it was done through a lie. It was indirectly to get the point across. And that's also a form of litoelis, to get the information out, but without actually saying the Lashon Hara. Another allowance for Lashon Hara, and in this section B, these are the most well-known categories, is really to protect somebody. For example, somebody's looking to go into business with somebody else as a partner in business. So, hey, you worked with so-and-so before. Can you tell me, is he honest? Right? That's important to know. Okay, and the answer doesn't have to be, oh, this was the biggest liar, the biggest cheater. So, you know, look, this is what happened. This is why the previous partnership dissolved. This is the story. Here's a newspaper clipping. I mean, that kind of information, because it's important for a person to know. Rabbi Feldman does give an example. He says, let's say somebody would say, look, there's a third chance that he's not honest, okay? Which means that there's a two-thirds chance that he is honest. So with that information, one-third chance that he's not honest, some people might opt out. But if you were to ask statistically, or what are the chances that this person is more honest versus not honest, the answer is the chances are the person is more honest, two-thirds versus a third. So it has to be handled, or the information needs to be delivered in a manner which is fair. And fairness is something which Tulishkin focuses about all the time. He asks a few questions. Is it true? Is it honest? And is it fair? Okay, so that's also very important. Another example of why a person might not be a great business partner is if he's a Baal Machlokas. You know, He doesn't get along with people that he works with. Well, you might need to know that. Could be that you already know the guy, and you get along swimmingly. But who knows what happens when you throw business in there and a partnership and differences of opinion, just to be aware, because maybe this is not the best. And we're not saying that the guy is not allowed to have a business. We're not saying he's not allowed to make a living. We're saying that maybe as a partner, not the best partner, and that's something which a person needs to know, because there's a lot at stake. Certainly with shidduchim, it's something which is a toelas, and people need to know to protect somebody. But it becomes a question of timing. What do I mean by timing? Let's say two people are going to be introduced, okay? So does a person need to know right now, for example, that, I mean, there are a lot of flaws that people have. Everybody has flaws. Do they all need to be laid out at the outset? Who knows? As everybody knows, if we find out something about somebody after the relationship has been developed, we might say, you know what? That might have been something which really bothered me in a different circumstance, but I know the person, and so therefore that flaw, not such a big deal. As opposed to at the initial meeting, if that were something which a person finds out, then they might say, you know, I'm not even going to try. So it's about timing. Now there are some things which are deal breakers, obviously, and depending on what they are, and I don't want to give too many examples, but depending on what they are, they might need to be known at the outset, or if the person finds out later on, they say, listen, that's something which is not happening under any circumstance. So.
And the fact that those are all very subjective.
Right, correct. They are subjective. Right, but to listen, to find out that a person, if a man, let's say, has been married before and he beat his wife, okay, that's something which a person needs to know. Okay, that's a really bad thing to have, and you don't want to put somebody into that kind of circumstance. And it doesn't matter what promises have been made. And oh, I know I did that before. I'm not going to do it again. Some behaviors they don't get fixed. But I mean, I'll give you a crazy example. You know, this is a difficult one. Let's say there's a woman who knows about herself that she can't have children. Okay, she can't give birth. Now there are different things that can be done today, as we all know, including of course adoption. But she knows she can't have children. Does she have to disclose that before her first date? She'll never go on a date. She'll never get married. Okay, but after a relationship has been established, then you put it in the guy's hand. Is that the kind of information that is going to destroy this relationship, or will he say, you know what, we can adopt or whatever, we'll work around it, right? And options exist, but that is another example of something which it has to be disclosed before the marriage. Yeah. But at what point in time does it have to be disclosed? Okay. Knowing what to ask as well as when, right? So that's another way to look at it, meaning that it's not so much lashon hara as much as for the person who's actually trying to build this relationship to know which questions are really important to you and which ones are not really important to you. Okay, and the same thing as I mentioned before, what becomes increasingly less important if all else is fine, but that's not lashon hara if people are trying to build a relationship and find if they are compatible with one another in the ways that they can determine prior to marriage. Okay, another example of to protect someone is in terms of loss of money. If you know, is this a good person to invest my money with? Is this a good store to go to? Now, there's a difference, by the way, between a store which happens to be a little more pricey, but is within the realm of what is market acceptable, versus a store which absolutely price gouges. Okay, so to say, you know, this store, you know, if you go to Target, it's going to be a little more expensive than at Walmart. So that's fine, because those are mild examples anyway, because we know what we're getting with Target and Walmart. But let's say there's a mom and pop shop, which you know, might be a little more expensive than Target, because you know, totally different business line. That's okay if it's within the realm of reason. But if they, you know, are charging double what some other place could get for a similar product, or even worse, so to say, you know, that's a little more than pricey. I think that they're a little exorbitant, irrespective of laws and rules of price gouging, which might be. So, but again, is it fair? Is it honest? And what is the point? We don't want people to not make a living, but if their living is actually being made in a dishonest way because of price gouging, so that is that's important. And of course, other forms of harm with respect to what is not just in business or in shidduchim, loss of money. I mean, as an example, we have right now in front of the shul, I think we have these two signs, the bolos, right? Be on the lookout. There are a couple of people who have had a track record of doing things in different communities, either trying to break into a building or stealing, whatever it may be. So that's not Lashon Hara. We're trying to protect people. So to put something that kind of information out there is important. If in fact the person is potentially harmful or dangerous, and that sometimes might be relative, might be subjective, but depending on a lot of the rules that we're going to be addressing tonight, in some cases are relative and perhaps subjective. Okay. And finally, C, the known information. What about not to associate with a sinner, or distinguishing between my own innocence versus naming who is guilty? Those are two very different subjects. So known information. So what do I mean by not to associate with a sinner? So there are people, as we all know, nobody's perfect, and there are people who might have reputations of engaging in certain kinds of behavior, which in the Jewish community might be with sinning. I'll take one which is not damaging to other people way. Let's just say. So let's say it's known that somebody doesn't keep kosher or doesn't have a kosher kitchen. So if somebody says, "Hey, can I eat in so and so's home?" So if you know for sure that the way in which they live their life is that they don't have a kosher kitchen, it's okay to say, "I don't think that they observe the laws of kashrus to your standards." Okay, that's fine. Why? Because it's honest, it's fair, and you're protecting this individual that doesn't mean you can't be their friend, it doesn't mean you can't have a conversation with them, it doesn't mean you can't invite them to your own home, it doesn't mean you can't be kind, it doesn't mean you can't be welcoming. It just means let the buyer beware with respect to this particular issue. Is that Lashon Hara? No, it's not Lashon Hara. And in fact, if you would even ask the people, they might say, "No, we don't observe the laws of kashrus, which would follow your standards perhaps." But that is fair information to share. But as opposed to a full not to associate with, that's not necessarily fair. Just because a person has a taiva, you know, for one area of sin, but unless the sin is that they're an axe murderer, then it's a different conversation. But if it's just something which the person, it's a vice, so whatever that may be, but which is not harmful to others, so that information is should be shared in a fair way. The person is obviously dangerous. That's very something else. Distinguishing between my own innocence versus naming who is guilty. This is an interesting one. So what happens if there's an accusation going around, or there is a suspicion going around? Excuse me. I'll use an example of, let's say, thievery. Okay, somebody, let's say, steals money from the pushka, and assuming there's no video evidence. Okay, and however it's done, it boils down to we have a few suspects. So let's say there are three suspects, and I'm just making up a hypothetical situation, and one person says, you know, we think it may have been you. Now let's say that person knows who it was, okay? And forget about who the suspects are, but whether it is one of the other suspects or whether it was not one of the other suspects. This person can say, "Look, it wasn't me, and here's my proof, this. What about fingering and pointing out who the guilty party is? So is that considered to be Lashon Hara? Are we protecting anybody? With the pushka, what are we talking about? I mean, I would assume that somebody who's stealing from the pushka probably needs the money. You know? So is it the worst thing? It's not a good thing. Not supposed to steal. Should we get it gotten in honest ways? But is it doing more harm than good by letting people know who this individual was? Because what's going to happen? There's going to be a fallout. There's going to be embarrassment. There's going to be... No, if an announcement is made, hey, please, or if the person says, "Listen, I know who did it, and I'll talk to the person and try to end the problem," so that could be a much better way than saying, "No, you better tell us who it is." No, I don't want to tell you who it is because it's not gonna help anything, and that goes into a different point which I'm going to get to in a few minutes as well, which I could just skip to a little bit now. When there is a way to resolve conflict, I have a whole section here on conflict resolution. So when there is a way to resolve a conflict through individuals resolving it amongst themselves rather than getting a third party involved, which typically just exacerbates and makes something even worse and gives people more fodder to talk, so obviously for people to work things out amongst themselves is much better. Okay, so now we're up to section 4, the Lashon Hara dues. When it is l'toelis. So we gave a few examples of allowance for Lashon Hara, as we saw in section 3. And now, when it is l'toelis, so the most important rules to follow are, Stick to facts. Avoid opinions. Especially avoid conjecture when you don't even know where it's going to lead. Couch with disclaimers. That's important. I heard. I haven't confirmed. I have confirmed. I know this is true. I am not sure, but be careful. Those are the kinds of disclaimers which are saying, look, you have to do your own investigation. I'm allowed to tell you this because there is a flag, there is a warning sign, there is something that you need to know because you're looking to get into business, because you're looking to get into a shidduch, because I don't want you to be harmed or hurt, etc. But always recognize that it needs to be couched in such a way that you're talking specifically about a behavior versus about the person. And that the person who's the recipient of the information needs to recognize that, does this behavior that we're looking at work for me? And if not, you know, then I'm going to go in a different direction. But what does that mean in terms of how I view the other person? Right? I mean, this happens a lot, unfortunately, in the shidduch world, for example. So if people who are dating decide, one or the other or both decide that they're not going to continue with the relationship. So there are two possibilities of how they can go about parting ways. One is they could part like a mensch and say, you know, this is not going to work, but hey, I'll recommend you for a friend of mine. I'll recommend you for a friend of mine. If I see you, I'll say hi. I'll be cordial. It's nice to know you. And the other one is, I never want to see you again in my life and I hate you. Okay? That's just the ways people are. So if it's the latter, obviously it's not very menschlich, but if a person is going to be talking about the other individual, all those disclaimers would certainly be necessary, except for point number five, which is you can't be a hater. Okay, anything which is a litoeles question, if the person who's being asked the question or if the person who's providing information hates the individual about whom the speech is taking place, better not to engage in this litoeles lashon hara at all, because it's not going to come across the way which is appropriate, which is dan lekav schus, which is bringing merit to the individual, even while, you know, whatever warning or whatever acknowledgement of their flaw, whatever it may be, if the person is a hater, it's not a good idea to engage. And unfortunately, sometimes it's hard to get out of it. Somebody says, you know, hey, what can you tell me about so-and-so as a business partner? I don't know anything. That's probably the easiest way to say it. Oh, because guess what? Don't even get me started. It's lashon hara. Because, of course, what is a person going to imply from that phrase? Don't even get me started. Okay, I got it. What do they mean by don't even get me started? Okay, and that's where things start to deteriorate. And, of course, you must know what you're talking about. Okay, so the idea, and that's where the disclaimers come in, that if a person does not know what they're talking about, then it's also not, and that's a much easier way to pull out of a conversation. What do you know about, I don't know. I don't know anything. I don't know anything is not, don't even get me started. It's very different. I'm not familiar with, I don't know enough about it. That is another way to avoid the conversation. And it's also respectful because it's a lot easier to claim ignorance and to therefore to protect any information that you know without putting somebody in a bad light. And remember, just, you know, some partnerships don't work because the personalities clash. That doesn't mean that either party isn't honest. Or it doesn't mean that a shidduch doesn't work out because there's personality conflict. But it doesn't mean that either person isn't a good person or a good match. It just means that it wasn't a good match for that individual. It doesn't mean that it won't be a good match for somebody else. Okay, lashon hara dues. When for health reasons. Okay, so this is, I mentioned this at the outset. Health reasons, what I mean by health reasons is that the person who is going to be telling the lashon hara needs to speak about the circumstances in their life, the things which they're dealing with, for their own health. Okay, so they need to have a specific audience. So obviously a therapist is usually going to be keeping it in confidence. And then the onus becomes on the therapist. How do you distinguish between what this person's issues are, especially if you know the other party, how do you distinguish between what this person is saying and your own perceptions of the person about whom they're speaking? Telushkin, in his book, says that if a person needs to get some things off their chest, the best best place to do it, if a person has a spouse, is a spouse. If a person does not have a spouse, is to have a really, really, really close friend where, you know, the conversation is over and it really stops here. And people need to also be on board with the idea that if I'm going to be the confidant for somebody else, that it really does stop here. Because once it goes beyond that, then it's like the feathers. Yeah.
What about a diary or journal, which somebody could possibly find?
Yeah, it's a. We're going to get into journalism and internet. Yeah, it is a. It is a. It would be a problem. I mean, obviously, somebody who's writing their private thoughts, they're allowed to do that for themselves. It's the onus is on the person who picks that up and says, "Private diary of, please do not read," and goes ahead and does that. That would be. Right, so that's an interesting question. I wonder if Rabbi Feldman. I mean, I didn't go through the whole book, but I wonder if Rabbi Feldman touched upon that kind of stuff. If it's right, and also it may expose things about the individual.
If somebody wrote it down, never intended to have it published, and years later after they died,
it's a good question. I mean, it depends. You know, we're not supposed to speak Lashon Hara about the dead, for example. So if we're keeping it to facts, you know, then maybe, but...
Well, it's not always facts, it's how people perceive
it. Right. These are good questions. I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer. Okay. Okay, so I mentioned 1, 2, and 3. Number 2, and when it's for health reasons, it should be goal-oriented rather than person-destroying-oriented. And that goes back to the question of therapy. It's why does the person have the need to say these things? And if it's to release the, you know, the endomorphins or whatever it is that a person that gets released to help a person calm down in order to achieve the things which they need for their own peace of mind and for their own just getting rid of rage or anger, that is goal oriented. But again, their target audience needs to be confined to a very specific audience. Okay, what about if it's for health reasons to protect another person, such as a person who is threatening suicide, or to harm others? Right, if there is an individual who is warning, and this is one of the big questions, for example, when it comes to the confidence that's given to a pastoral or in therapeutic admissions, if somebody says, "I'm planning to kill somebody," right, and there have been lawsuits about this kind of stuff where a therapist was told that by let's say a boyfriend, I'm going to kill the girlfriend, and by the patient, right? By the boyfriend who's the patient to the therapist says, "I'm going to kill my girlfriend," and hides the information, and then guess what happens? He kills the girlfriend. So was the therapist required to report that? And there are different laws about it, and lawsuits have been held on account of those terribly tragic situations. But in that case, is that Lashon Hara, for example? I don't even know if that's considered Lashon Hara. If sharing that information with the important people who need to know that, need to protect themselves, so that would be something which would certainly be allowed speech. But it goes back to the guidelines in the bottom of the previous page. Stick to the facts, avoid opinion, avoid conjecture, and couch with disclaimers. And of course, if it's in confidence, I think that there are protection laws as well. Associated again, depending on the state or the district or whatever it may be, that would protect the therapist for breaking that confidence or the clergy. Okay, and finally, we have two more categories in Lashon Hara dues when it's for conflict resolution. So, what about information shared with an educator or an administrator? So Moshe Feinstein was against, for example, instructing children to inform on others. You know, sometimes teachers will say, "I want to know who did this. You have to tell me." Or if you see any student engaging in such and such practice, you have to let us know about it. So that Moshe was against it. There are others who say it really depends on the age of the children in terms of doing that, because what are you training children to do? Are you training children to be snitches? Are you training them to tattle? Are you training them to think that it's okay to speak Lashon Hara about others? So there are variances of opinions on that subject. But Rabbi Feldman was of the view that even Rav Moshe would agree that if student came to the teacher on their own, not because they were prompted by the, you know, whatever, in other words, if they came and said, you know, I saw somebody, you know, engaging in drugs and I'm worried about him, for example. So that gets back into the previous point, which is to protect another person. So if they're doing it because they're concerned, as opposed to because they were prompted by the teacher to do that, so that there's more allowance for that. And it's another question which comes up. This is something which I deal with every now and then: information shared with the rabbi. Now, thank God, it's usually not in the scheme of things, at least from my perspective, not that big of a deal. But every now and then, somebody will come to me and they'll say, "No, I don't want to tell you who it is. I don't want to tell you what's been going on. But let me tell you what's been going on. Okay, I have a problem with a person who this." And I say, "Okay, would you like me to get involved and try to be a medium and a peacemaker?" "No, I just want you to know about it. But do you want me to do anything?" "If you want me to do something without a name, I don't know who it is, and I don't know, I'll keep it between us, and I'll talk to the person on your behalf." And some people have said, "Okay," and some people have said, "I'll tell you who it is, but I don't want you to do anything." And sometimes it's said to me, "You know what, I'll work it out on my own." And I love those best, because that's really the way it should be done. But obviously sometimes there are people, not this individual who's talking, but the person about whom the individual is speaking, that person puts up a wall and says, there's nothing to discuss. So, when you're an ogeya bedavar, when you're directly involved, sometimes it's a hard conversation to have. And so, in order to get to resolution, so there is allowance for the details to be shared. Now, it's important for whoever is the recipient of the information not to jump to conclusions, because as we all know, in every conflict, there are how many sides to the story? Three. His side, and the truth. So, got to hear the two sides first, and then try to figure out what the truth is, and then hopefully help with the resolution. But it's like the Mishnah Avos says, when two people come before you, if you're judging between a case or mediator, you have to look at them both as guilty before you adjudicate the case, and then after they've accepted the judgment or the resolution, you have to say, they're both innocent. Okay, and that's also important for whoever's going to play in that position to bear in mind. Okay, and that's number three. As I said before, better to try to resolve the issue directly, if that's indeed possible. And guidelines when engaging in a necessary conversation. So, we've already touched upon that. I'm not sure why I put that in there again. But it is stick to the facts, avoid opinion, avoid conjecture, try to be fair. That is most important. Okay, Lashon Hara don'ts. So some of them are very clear and they're understandable. Lying is not a good idea, with a very rare exception. Lying to lying for the sake of shalom bayis, as we know, that's something which God did. Right? When Avram, when Sarah laughed when she was told you're going to have a baby, and she says, Sarah's too old, and God says, why did Sarah say she's too old? Okay, so there would be a conflict between Avram and Sarah. So that kind of lying for the sake of shalom bayis is okay. I think Rabbi Feldman gave an example of also, because it's the difference between instructions to children versus instructions to adults. So let's say the phone rings at home and the caller ID says it's so and so, and for whatever reason, the recipient, let's say it's the husband who knows that the phone call is for him, and he just can't deal with it now for whatever reason, doesn't have the time, or just doesn't, whatever it may be, and says, "Tell them I'm not home." Okay, so he says, if it's the wife, if it's the spouse, or if it's an older child who understands what's going on, then that's okay. But to have a little child be trained to lie, knowing that it's a lie, so that is not a good idea. Okay. Slander is just looking to destroy somebody. Gossiping, to gossip, I'm not going to go, I'm never there, so I don't know what happens. I've heard things about what happens around the pool and some of the clubhouses, and at the clubhouse and some of the clubhouses. Okay. Gossiping to gossip. So I would recommend that people try to elevate the conversation and try to lift them to a higher level, not talking about people to talk about people, but to talk about a play I saw, to talk about the baseball or the sports or a great Hilchos 101 Lashon Hara do's and don'ts shir that I went to. Elevate the conversation. Okay. So I said at the outset that sometimes the Lashon Hara concern is something which may even be positive, yeah, but it opens the door to negativity. So I tried to think of a name of nobody in the shul. I'm pretty sure there's no Sprinza in the shul. So if you imagine if somebody says, I love Sprinza, and list all of my lists about Sprinza, everything I love about her, but there's just one thing I don't like about her. Okay? Can you imagine what the rest of the conversation is going to look like? That's an example Talishkin gives. He says, you know what, everybody says, yeah, you're right, Taka, there's something about Sprinza I don't like either. I mean, that's just a deterioration of the conversation. And of course, it's absolute Lashon Hara. Be aware and know your audience. This is an example of Avak Lashon Hara. What's Avak Lashon Hara? Avak literally means like the dust of Lashon Hara. It means I have no ill intent at all. As a matter of fact, I'm being complimentary. Look at the example. Don't say, I had the most lovely meal at so-and-so to someone who has never been invited or who doesn't like so-and-so. Because what happens? You had a meal. They never invited me. Or, it's great that you had a meal, but... Okay? Right, so you have to be careful. You have to know the audience, because even something as nice as that can lead to disparagement. Can even apply to speaking glowingly of, and I put in parentheses, some students. Right, let's say there's a teacher who says, "Ah, how's Yankee? Yankee is like the best in the class. How's Shmerl? What an amazing, amazing child. And how's Maishi? He's okay." Wait, he's not amazing? What's wrong with Maishi? And that's where, again, there's probably isn't ill intent, and there's an honesty there, but when you have the benefit of comparison with all of them, it's better to speak in vagaries. I think Rabbi Feldman quoted this in the name of Rav Pam, Zichron Bracha, that it's better to speak in vagaries, and when people say, how is such and such? All my students are wonderful. All my students are this. And this way, there's no conjecture that people can make, and there's no direction that people can go. I've spoken to colleagues about shuls, and while they might tell stories about, you know, Balabas who I could never identify, I say, so what do you think about Balabas? I love all my Balabatim. Okay, good. All right, that's it. What about this one who drives you nuts? I love them all. Okay, I get it. I feel exactly the same way. Okay. Laying it on thick may also be a avak lashon hara, depending on the audience. Right? In other words, if let's say there are a few people around. You're the most amazing. Okay, people can read through that. So it's one thing if it's understood the personality and everybody knows the person and we're having a good time. That's one thing. But if there's somebody in there, and that's why you have to know the audience, who's going to misunderstand or not get what's going on. And then people need to be very, very careful. One of the big issues that we're almost up to Purim is Purim spiels and the idea of it's just a joke. So sometimes people take liberties with jokes. And this is, I listen to a lot of stand-up comedy. And the best stand-up comedy is comedy that works for all. You know, and now it's people get offended by a whole lot of things, especially with politics and whatever. So comedians... Good ones, especially the clean ones, they're amazing. They know how to walk a line that everybody understands is a joke. But they're also talking in generalities. They're not talking about anybody that anybody knows because they have to appeal to everybody in the room. So that's a different thing. But when you're dealing in a place like a school or a shul, and it comes to something like a Purim spiel where there's humor at somebody's expense, so there's a very important line that needs to be followed. Not so much drawn. I think it's naturally drawn, but it needs to be followed in terms of what kind of jokes are allowed. Meaning, I've seen, for example, in Yeshiva University. I'm trying to remember if Rabbi Feldman was the one who did Rabbi Herschel Schechter. I don't remember. It's interesting, but where they'll ask the Rebbe in advance, Rebbe, can I imitate you? Okay, and they have to have a real great love for the Rebbe to be able to on the one hand use the Rebbe's character and imitate the Rebbe, but also not demean the Rebbe and not diminish the Rebbe and to do what they're doing as a joke, but which has nothing really to do with the Rebbe, except maybe the Rebbe's mannerisms, but he's on board with it. That's very different than actually making jokes at the expense of people involved. I once attended a Purim spiel many years ago where a particular Rebbe was really I mean, the guy who played him was on the ball, and this Rebbe's wife was there, and she said to me afterwards, "Is he really like that? Is that the way they perceive?" And I said, I have nothing to do with this. I mean, it was, you know, because whatever. I'll leave that for what that was. But the point is that there's a very fine line that a lot of people don't realize that they cross when it comes to this. I once heard a story about a Rebbe who was spieled, and they imitated the way that he davened in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And he, watching it, started to cry. And the Talmud comes over and says, "Rebbe, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to." He says, "You did a perfect job. I'm crying because I realize how fake I am on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur." So that's a different kind of, that's not as much Lashon Hara as much as that's very, it's very humbling. But the point is that, again, it needs to be done very carefully. Okay, accepting Lashon Hara. So this is also in the category of Lashon Hara don'ts. Not to accept Lashon Hara should mean to judge favorably. So I gave the example before of the therapist, and really any of the people who are confidants, or let's say somebody, you know, you don't even realize that somebody's speaking Lashon Hara until after. He's like, "Oh my goodness, what did we just hear? Oh, that was Lashon Hara." Okay, so what we want to do is we want to distinguish between what was said and the person. Okay, so maybe it wasn't true. I could be down with Kav Schus about what the person said, meaning that the accusation or the things that the person was saying about the other person, they weren't accurate, and it's not a good reflection. Maybe this individual who spoke it was a little braggy, was a little angry for different reasons. So take things with, you know, a grain of salt, a handful of salt, whatever it needs to be, in order to judge the object of the or the subject of that conversation favorably. But at the same time, do not assume that the person sharing the information is lying. Meaning, I can't believe that person told me all those lies about so and so. Some of it may be true, but it's all about verification of facts. Is it all correct? A and B. What's context? Okay, people do all kinds of things that if it's presented in a completely different context than when it actually took place. It can look very poorly and it can reflect very badly. But if a person has all the information, it's certainly much better. I mean, I had a story recently of a conflict where when I heard the side from one individual, I said, "Hold on, I'm clearly not getting the full picture." And sure enough, I spoke to the other person and I got a more complete picture. And then I got more clarification on the incident in question that was up for discussion. And you realize that you know each person is kind of right in whatever they did in that scenario, but when you look at it in just the way that it's presented from one side and one perspective, without verification of all the facts and without context, yeah, a person can look extremely extremely bad. So it's important to not rush to conclusions, neither about the subject of the conversation nor about the speaker who gave over the information, especially if the person heard it from somebody else, as we all know, broken telephone. Okay, finally, we're up to just our last concern for this day and age, and that is the question of journalism and the internet. And as I mentioned, Rabbi Feldman has a full chapter on this subject, where one of the questions which we need to consider with any information which is put out there in journalism and internet is verification of the truth. A and B, just as true, does it need to be known? So there are newspapers, for example. I just happened to pick up this one. So this one has a lot of uplifting stories about wonderful things that are going on in the Jewish community. Okay, this is a Florida Jewish home. Okay, nice stories, nice speakers who came to the school, somebody donated the Torah, you know, I mean, beautiful things. So is that Lashon Hara to tell the? I think it's not. If that's exactly the goal of the newspaper, we live in a. Of course, we're not confined to Jewish newspapers, and we see everything that can come, you know, into our inbox or on certain websites which give news, for example. So that leads us to our next question: is the information that's being shared of benefit to society? You know, when you look at some news programs or some newspapers, everything that they write about is doom and gloom, right? Coronavirus, mass murderer, axe murderer, whatever it may be, it's all doom and gloom. Okay, so leaving aside the fact that it's all very negative, or a lot of it is very negative, The question is there benefit to society to have this information? So people need to know there's a murderer on the loose. So of course, and here's his name, and here's what he looks like. That's, of course, that's not Lashon Hara. That's important, as we saw before, for protection. But then we get into the arena of, does everybody need to know? So Talushkin has a lot about politicians. A lot of the examples that he gives are about politicians. And the distinction which is made between their roles as governing individuals or as legislators, whatever their role is in politics, versus their personal life. And his point is that if their personal life, for example, if the information about their personal life gets in the way of their governing properly, so that needs to be known. So he gives an example of, I think, Kennedy, who may have had some liaison with some lady who was involved with the mafia. Okay? So if he's having some liaison with a secretary, you know, whatever, okay? I mean, again, this is Talushkin's... The book was written in the I think mid-90s. So it's pre the president from the 90s, his scandals. But it's pre that, but it has a lot of other information. It says, but he gives the example of, I think he gave that example of Kennedy. So he said, if Kennedy's having a, you know, whatever the word is, with some lady, who cares? But if he's involved with some lady who's involved with the mafia, and the mafia therefore can have some influence on the president, that's information that's important, because that may get in the that may get in the way. And the same thing holds true with other leaders. What do we need to know about what they have done or what they say or etc. versus how does it reflect on their personal life or what kind of person they are? So to discuss opinions, I guess, is one thing, but to translate it to a discussion about the individual, right? Let's talk about the president's policies. Don't talk about if he's a good husband. That's nobody's business, okay? Or a good father. Again, it's Lashon Hara. Even if it's coming across as positive, it's always going to turn negative. The dangers of anonymity on the internet, as we all know, allows for people to do and say anything that they want with no filter, and that is it's a scary world in which we live, in which people can say whatever they want, and they can say, that's just my internet presence, that's not me, so whatever I do there, that's okay, because that's not real, that's not the real me. Well, that persona is heavily involved in speaking and spreading Lashon Hara. And the dangers of forwarding compromising information with a click. And this is just a small message that I have for us, because I know that I've seen this, and of course we should all be aware that anything that we write in email we have to assume is public, because anybody by accident and certainly on purpose can forward it in order to make somebody look bad. And that's something which we all need to consider before we actually do that. But it depends on, goes back to the previous, to one of the previous points, which is the sharing of it with Toelis. But that always needs to be, it always needs to be done with care, because we never know what somebody else can do with the information that has been shared, which was very often private. That's why some people have disclaimers in the bottom of the email. This is private information. It's not meant to be shared, etc., etc., etc. So let the clicker beware. Toelis means for a purpose. A purpose where the outcome is meant to be goal-oriented for some positive outcome. Okay, so that you'll either avoid a negative relationship or some kind of negative outcome which would be harmful to you. That's what Lito Ellis means. So that's why those examples are given in the context of a shidduch, in the context of a business partner or something where somebody's money is at risk. Okay, conclusions, here we are. Lashon Hara is bad. Don't engage in it. Be very careful with the things which we say. Remember that our job as Jewish people is to build bridges, not to break bridges. Because our goal, as we all know, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, God is one, and our job, as much as possible, is to be united as one, to imitate God in that way. And that's why we say, a lot of things which we do together. Aleinu l'shabeach, Adonako, we have to give praise. But at Har Sinai, the goal was, Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar, people encamped at the mountain as one, Ki Ish Echad B'Lev Echad, like one heart and like one person. Is our goal to agree on everything? No. But our goal is, as much as possible, to have each other's back. And have each other's back means, even if I don't agree with you, I love you, you're my brother, you're my sister, we are all one family, and we need to do as best as we can to put each other up and not put each other down. Lashon Hara, as I think we all know, but sometimes we need these reminders, is the number one ingredient of what destroys communities. So hopefully, at least we can start a movement here of being pro not speaking Lashon Hara, being pro not listening to Lashon Hara, and remember that there's a lot more to learn, and there's a lot of subtleties in the law, but hopefully this overview for this evening is the beginning for what should be a good jump into the rules of Lashon Hara, and certainly the practices of not speaking Lashon Hara.